Hi, my name is Cecilia Pounin, and welcome to this episode of Brave New Women. All around the world, there are amazing, ordinary women doing extraordinary things. Brave New Women is about giving those women a platform and a voice, and it's about changing the way that women are perceived. And it's a way of inspiring all of us to do the things that we've always wanted to do. Today, I'm absolutely thrilled to be talking to Diane Quinn. Diane lives in New York, and she is the co-founder and artistic director of Unseen Theatre. So Unseen Theatre is an audio podcast which showcases original plays which feature female protagonists. And Diane is not only the co-founder and artistic director of Unseen Theatre, she is herself a professional dancer, singer, actor, choreographer, director, company manager, and playwright. She's had a long career. She's been involved in many, many live or recorded productions, both in the US and internationally. And today I'm talking to Diane both about her career as a performer, and then we'll dive deep into Unseen Theatre. So welcome, Diane.
Thank you very much, Cecilia, and thanks for having me. I'm really delighted to be a guest. I've heard some of the other people you've interviewed and learned about their careers, and it's really a wonderful thing you're doing. So thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for your kind words. So, Diane, when did you know you wanted to be an actress?
Well, it started, I would reformat that a little bit and say when I wanted to be on stage, and then it kind of morphed into acting. I began quite young as a dancer. I studied ballet as a child, and I just was drawn to the performance aspect of being on stage and bringing so much joy in the faces of the audience. It was just really something I enjoyed doing. And so I was quite serious about ballet. And after studying ballet, I went into ballroom. And then from that, I went into musical theater. And I started with community theater productions and then transitioned to professional and regional theater and dinner theater and traveled all over and earned my union cards, both Equity and SAG-AFTRA. And then I did film work and television through SAG-AFTRA. And trade shows and industrials, and I directed and choreographed some things for those. And eventually, through that process of mostly dancing and singing and focusing on the musical aspect of my career, I then transitioned to being an actor. And I've always sort of known in the back of my mind that I wanted to perform in character because I loved reading plays as a child. And I loved learning about character and story and narrative. And it just always drew me in, being able to embody a character and live their life for a little bit was really an exciting prospect. So I think I've always known in a weird way. But I think when I started taking it seriously is when I was transitioning from musical theater after having done quite a bit of it to training as an actor. I started really kind of getting the bug to learn more about acting and started studying.
And what has being an actor taught you about yourself?
I think that, first of all, the way that I trained through a lot of different private coaches, but then also in group settings and finally going to the Atlantic Theater School for proper training, I really feel, not that the others weren't proper, but I mean, that was more of an intense training process than the, you know, one-off coaching and things I did here and there.
In-depth.
Yes, thank you. In-depth is a better word. But when I was studying, I really was learning a lot about myself, about my emotional fabric, how it was sort of woven into me and how to, I want to say, utilize that. You know, David Mamet, who is one of the co-founders of The Atlantic, talks about not using an emotion that is too close to you for character. And that is something I had to learn the hard way by first trying to portray characters that were some of, you know, had gone through some of the things I had gone through, and I saw what he meant. I really enjoy inhabiting character and learning about the life that I haven't led, you know, something else that perhaps I don't have experience with. And I said, as a child, I read a lot of books, and I also read a lot of plays, and I really enjoy the whole experience of theater. And I think that's one aspect. Another aspect is, of course, being an actor. It's taught me about the business end of being an actor as well. You know, when I started out, I kind of thought, like dance, since I had a success in that area, that it would be an instant kind of success. And I've had a lot of wonderful opportunities and met terrific people that I've worked with, but it wasn't quite the fairy tale that you hear about. It was more of rigorous training and lots of auditioning and lots of hard work, lots of study, lots of preparation, lots of research. So I think that it taught me sort of to be patient, but to be diligent.
Mm-hmm.
It also taught me a little bit about my own, I would say my own skills vocally, how to trust myself, how to, I have a wonderful teacher that I worked with that is his famous saying. Anyone who's worked with him will you know, say to you, trust yourself, because Ron is always reminding us that even in the moment, we have to go with what we're feeling the character would do based on the research and study we've done of the character, and to not self-direct. That's something that, having been a director too, I sometimes fall into. So it's hard to step back and really just allow the character to come through you, but that is what I have learned to do.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing is that one of the things that you really love about theatre is, in fact, having the experience of living other people's lives.
Yes, it's a wonderful experience. And you really, it's also an educational experience, because the different characters I've played, I get to see a part, you know, really, we're all very similar people all over the world. We have different experiences, but our emotional experiences are similar. Everyone, you know, has experienced happiness at some point, sadness at another. There's constantly things in our lives that are bringing us to different emotional places. And to be able to access that through a character, through what the playwright has given you, is a really wonderful opportunity.
And so it's a way also of finding our common humanity, that we all have the same feelings, which arise through the different experiences. You know, we all have different experiences that bring us to those emotions.
Yes, I would say exactly that. I think, you know, even if I'm playing, the example in one of the classes I was is, you know, how can you play a queen if you've never been a queen? And one of the coaches I was working with said, you know, you don't have to play a queen in quotes. You know, there isn't one way a queen is. A queen is a human being. So you have to be able to understand the complexity and the pressures that that person in a high position is going through, which you can relate to in your own life. You might not be someone in royalty, but you certainly had experiences where you felt a tremendous amount of pressure or sadness or, you know, a decision that had to be made. And so you relate to those parts and portray those parts, find those parts in yourself. That's an important thing I learned through my training, is anything that is on the page, I can find in myself. It's not going to be the exact same experience. In fact, it's better if it isn't. But I can find something in myself, in my life, and transfer that onto the character and make choices for the character based on the knowledge I have of how I felt going through those experiences or how I would feel going through those experiences.
Mm-hmm. And Diane, when you look back over your career, what have been the highlights?
Oh, there's been so many. It would be too long to list. We'd have several hours to go through. But I was really fortunate as a young dancer to work in different settings, not just in ballet, but I got to travel. I got to see parts of the world that perhaps I wouldn't have gotten to see in other fields. I spent some time on a cruise ship dancing and singing, and that was wonderful. And I traveled the East and West Caribbean every week and, you know, got to know a lot of terrific people that came on board and also the company that I worked with. And I got to travel to Japan and work in musical theater there. We did different shows. We had different themes from Broadway shows or country western shows or, you know, what have you. And got to train to speak Japanese so that I can blend in the community because I lived there off and on for 2 years. And just different, and even in smaller towns when I worked in dinner theaters, I got to spend time among the people in that town and learn about them, see how other parts of the country experienced all different kinds of things. Whether it was lots of snow in Wisconsin or whether it was having a wonderful Amish meal in Pennsylvania or, you know, enjoying Texas or where have you, you know, wherever I went, I really got to know the culture because I lived there. Sometimes shows run 6 months when you're on an out-of-town contract. And, you know, you get to really understand the town. Of course, you're always a guest in the town, but still, you get to experience the people there, and that to me was very exciting.
So not only are you learning about people by acting them, but you're also actually learning by living in places that are different. There's a real openness to other people's experiences in what you're saying.
Absolutely. I think one of the, you asked before, and I didn't think of it at the time, but I think one of the key things I learned as an actor is something that I intrinsically was doing anyway, but I now know how to sort of hone in on it, is observation. Hmm. Most actors are very good listeners and very good observers. And I found myself really watching and listening to different people all through my life, but once I learned that that was really an important skill, kind of honing in on that and paying attention to all kinds of nuance, how someone, you know, walks or carries their body differently. And of course, with dancing training, that informed that, I'm sure. But really paying attention to how someone else behaves in the world to different circumstances. And traveling around as I did, that gave me the opportunity to do that in different places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me now a little bit about Unseen Theatre? So what is Unseen Theatre?
Unseen Theatre is an audio podcast that showcases original plays. That means plays that are not produced yet. And so you can only see them, well, only hear them on our podcast. But they are, the difference is that they have a female protagonist. And they're voiced by union actors, SAG-AFTRA actors.
And why are those two things important to you?
Well, female protagonist is very important to me, being a female, but also experiencing many different arenas where I was in the company of playwrights, mostly male, and therefore most of the characters were male. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but I felt the lack of female protagonists, and I really wanted to share female stories, and I really wanted to focus on that. That was really one of the first things that we talked about, my co-founder and I, when we were formulating what we would have, what the podcast would consist of, how we would do it. Female protagonist-led stories was the important ingredient, sort of the crux of the whole thing.
And when you say tell female stories, do you feel as though female stories are different from from men's stories?
Well, no. As I said, I mean, I'd say female stories only to emphasize female protagonists. But really, I think, you know, male and female stories are similar, but sometimes a female perspective of a story is really what I thought was missing in some of the plays that I had experienced and read. Again, we work with male and female playwrights, and anyone identifying as female protagonists. So we really wanted to get across, I think let me pause for a second. When I say, well, to get back to your question, do I think the stories are different? I think that there's just a different perspective a female has when going through life, really. And I think that that isn't something important that we need to also share. I've read many plays over many years, both new playwrights and also well-known playwrights, and I love all of them. But I felt in my experience, something that really prompted the decision was I was working in a lot of playwrights development groups, and those kind of settings are, you know, before COVID, we met in person in a place and we were given a play, and it's a cold reading situation. So you're giving a scene from a play that some playwright is working on, and you're asked to go up in front of the group and read your part that you're assigned. And many times I was assigned male roles because they only can give the actors who show up the plays. And when I was reading the male roles, I had a lot of different lines and interjections, and I was really a part of the work. A lot of times when I was reading the female roles, I didn't feel as if the playwright had a whole storyline for the female. I created one as the character. Even in a cold reading setting, you sort of get a nuance from quickly reading through and picking out the nuggets of the character. But sometimes I felt that the female characters were more incidental to the script than actually an active part of the script. So I wanted to change that. I wanted to focus on the female perspective.
And I think that it's quite, you know, common knowledge that when you look at most films, almost all the protagonists are male, mm-hmm. and they're strong and they're doing these courageous things. And right. a lot of the female protagonists are wearing, you know, fairly skimpy clothing, or you're wondering why they need to be wearing that.
I won't say what show, but there's a show that we were just watching last evening, and that is exactly my comment. Why are these women only in skimpy costumes and only shown, you know, partially clad instead of having a voice? And,
Yeah, I think that's, I think it's incredibly important because that's, you know, there is so much film media, and it's so much of it is on that exact same format. Of, you know, man comes to say, it's just all fairy story stuff. And I mean, I agree with you. I think it's just incredibly important that in film and in fiction that you see women who are real women and who are doing things that are brave and who are doing things that are going outside their comfort zone.
Yeah, and even everyday situations, just to see how a woman handles those things, you know. Of course, it's in a play, you have to have an arc and you have to have some kind of conflict in order for that to be an interesting story. So we do have high stakes in plays. But in film, where you have a little bit more time, sometimes the characters, I, you know, again, the director in my head is saying, why don't they have them, you know, doing this? Because you just, you really feel like there's got to be more to this character that they've given us. And sometimes, very cleverly, they show one side of the person, and then if it's a series, you learn more about them, and that's wonderful, and I'm seeing that more and more. But I would honestly say I grew up seeing women as, mainly in film, you know, a lot of times, like you said, their role was the damsel in distress, that the man came and saved them. And I know that was an era, and I'm sure that, that it had its place at the time, but I just feel that doesn't need to be perpetuated in the work that we're doing. Not that there can't be a woman that needs a man's support. That's certainly not out of the question. But I felt like the woman needed to have agency. She needed to be able to make her own decisions, not based on what her man wanted, but what she herself wanted. Mm-hmm. And again, I saw that even in the plays that I read as a child. I many times created a stronger female character if there wasn't one. So I think that's probably why I was drawn to that ideology.
You mentioned before that you wanted to have female protagonists, but you also wanted to have union actors. Can you tell me about why that's important to you?
Sure. I'm a proud union member, both, as I said, for stage actors and for film and television actors. And I have been in the union for some time, and I have also been before I started the union. And it's a world of difference to me. And not to say that people shouldn't first, you know, go through being non-union and learn about the craft of performing before they join the union. But it just, it's more, I feel more cared for by the union. I feel that there are, perhaps from my early dance ballet training, I'm a pretty rule follower kind of person. And there are certain rules in the union. The first being, don't do non-union work once you're in a union. So, of course, I didn't feel that I myself were able to perform unless I was union. But then I also thought about what I wanted to put out there in the world. And I wanted to support unions and what they do. They provide an organization for and rules that sets and stages have to follow in order for the safety of their workers. And particularly now during COVID, I think that's really important. And, you know, the union has always sort of made me feel safer in the workplace. So that was very important for me. And years ago, I had been offered a different type of podcast. It was more of a corporate podcast. And I went in as a union member for a union audition. And for some reason, the producer chose not to have a union contract and called me and said, we still want to cast you, but we're going to go non-union. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And it was a shame because it would have been a weekly position and it would have been, you know, a lucrative and a good job. But I just felt it was a disservice to the union that I had worked so hard to get into.
I feel as though there are layers and layers of context in relation to the union that probably would take us a bit too much time to get into in this podcast, but I just feel like there's a whole world there that I don't know anything about in terms of the union in the US and with.
Well, I'll give you a quick synopsis from one of my early experiences. I was thrilled to be cast in a film where I was told I was going to be doing background work. And background work usually means, most people know this from film and television, but you're literally in the background. You might see a part of you, or you might see a kind of faded image of yourself if you watch the film, but you're not really an intrinsic part. I mean, you're very important, but your work isn't featured. And you don't say anything, and you're just part of the scenery, really. But again, very important work, and I did the background work for some time as I was learning about film and television work. But I was hired as background. There were four of us on the set who were background. Again, that's a small set, so it's possible that we still could be background. It was for television. But then once we got there, I was told, okay, you're going to go, this is the leading man, and he's doing this character, and you're going to go sit on his lap and chat with him and so forth. So I knew, unless they were shooting in a very odd way, I'd be right there in the scene. And so, you know, I wasn't union. I couldn't call my union rep and say, but I got a different rate than a featured player, even though I was featured. I also shot for, I think it was a 16-hour shoot, got no overtime. Our dinner break, or we're supposed to get meal breaks when you're union, you get those. We got a box of pizza thrown at us at about hour 8. And our dressing rooms weren't dressing rooms. They stapled black plastic bags over wood and you know, said, go behind there. I mean, it was just a very different experience. You know, there's rules, there's organization. I'm not faulting anyone who's starting out and can't do union work. But for me, personally, it was quite a difference once I joined the union. And it seemed a more professional and organized atmosphere for me.
Thanks. I mean, that example really helps me to understand what it means to be union, what it means to be non-union. So that's much clearer.
And again, that might be, you know, I'm not, like I said, I don't want to disparage anyone who's working non-union, who is trying to follow the rules, who is trying to give a good, you know, comfortable set for the people they work with. I've had wonderful experiences as well, non-union learning, but that was one that sort of stuck out for me because it made me realize I really want to join the union.
So getting back to Unseen Theatre, where do the, so you're saying you like to have female protagonists, union, union actors, and what sort of, where are the plays coming from and what sort of issues are you looking to address?
Well, the plays come from submissions of people that I have worked with or someone that I know has worked with. At this point, I'm not asking for open submissions. And the reason we're not doing that is simply because there's a lot of people out there and we are a very small but nimble team. And we just would be inundated with plays and it's, you know, we're just not at the point where we have the staff to handle that. In future, we will be more open and perhaps in accepting more plays. But at the moment, we're doing referrals and we've reached out to cast members we've already worked with or in my experience or other people on the team's experience, referrals from people that are trusted. Playwrights that want to submit their work would then go to either us directly or to the website. And we do have a feedback page that they can send us a note saying, you know, I have a play if you're interested. And that's always welcome. Just giving us a little synopsis, not sending us your work, but giving us a little synopsis of something you're working on. And, you know, after it's, of course, better after you're familiar with us, after you've listened to our work to see what we're looking for, after you've read the FAQs on our website that tell you the type of work we're looking for. And generally, it's any genre, any length. Since we work in the style of a radio play, and what I mean by that is, and this is pre-COVID, but everyone is in the same room working off each other. And even though it's a recorded production, it is still done live. So we do it as best we can in order as a play, you know, one scene flowing into the next, all recorded in the same room with all the actors present. And we do that. That was a decision we made because we felt that the dynamic when actors are playing off each other. Most recorded productions are done, you know, in studios separately by yourself. But this, we wanted that dynamic. We wanted that give and take of actors looking at each other in the eye and being able to relate. So that's why we work that way. Again, with COVID, we may have to adjust that model. But for now, that's what we have done. And I'm sorry, the second question you
asked? And the second question, are there particular issues that that you're looking for, that you're trying to address?
I would say yes and no. I and my co-founder are very interested in political issues of the time because we are in a very fraught time. And so far, the plays we have worked with sort of sparked our interest because of the nature of what they're addressing. We have three plays we've currently produced available on our website and anywhere else you find podcasts. And each of the plays, although unique in style and very different from each other, all deal with some, for us, all deal with some sort of political issue. And when I mean political, I mean they relate to something that's going on right now in the world, something that's of concern. For example, the first play, although a Greek tragedy and based on the great granddaughter of Odysseus's story, the main character, Adara, is dealing with very large questions of what is it to make decisions. She's a young person, but she's making decisions that will affect the rest of the world, basically, her world. And it's a good versus evil. It has a lot of things, but it deals for us. We saw the sort of connection to something that was happening at the time we were recording it, and people making decisions of great proportion that would affect society. And that was something that we were drawn to. Another play that we worked on. Appeal to us because it dealt with a decision that is currently being talked about with the Supreme Court. The third that we worked on and co-wrote deals with something that has been in the news for the last several years. And we just felt, again, these things kind of pop out of the mix for us and take our attention because they're more current, even though there's a lot of other parts of them. That's the core element that draws us right now. And that could change. I mean, we're welcome, as I said, for people. We talk about what we're doing, and someone might have something that doesn't fit any of the parameters I just said, but still, if the team likes it, and if we think it fits with what we're doing that season, then we're willing to, you know, read through it and work with the playwright and adapt it to a radio format.
So for the moment, you've been drawn to scripts that are more, that touch on something that's happening, you know, current events, you know, political issues of the day.
Yeah, right now that seems to be the draw.
And why did you decide on a podcast format?
I think that is because what you and I touched on earlier, imagination. When I was a child and reading a lot, I would use my imagination. I would picture what the character looked like, all the elements of the story, and it really helped me sort of invest in the character. And also, listening, that aspect of listening, I think, is sort of, well, I don't want to make too many comments on society, but I kind of feel that sometimes it's lost. We're all sort of drawn to screens nowadays, and I feel like the attention span has lessened, and people don't really listen to each other in the same way, pre-computer, pre-phone. And so I just feel like maybe that's something that we can bring back. That was one aspect of it. We really wanted to have plays that we could have people interact with, even though they're, of course, not interacting really, but they can get involved and immerse themselves in the world of the play. So that was one aspect of it. And we even used that little catchphrase of nurture your imagination. Another aspect of it was we wanted something that we would be able to work with, as I said, with SAG-AFTRA, and we wanted to be able to present something that was accessible theater that was accessible to a large group of people, people regardless of location, people regardless of financial situation or mobility issues, or in the case of someone who's very close to me, visual issues. So we wanted to create something that was more universal, that was more accessible. And a podcast seemed a nice way of doing that. And as I said, the radio drama part came about not because I wasn't aiming to do radio drama. I was sort of wanting to modernize it, which we've done, because we don't have the Foley and things like that. Those were all choices that my co-founder and I talked about beforehand. And anyone who's not familiar with Foley, it's basically all the sound effects like a movie. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to create something, as I said, that was accessible, that people could enjoy theater anywhere they were, anytime they wanted, basically on their schedule, but be involved in it, not feel as if it was passive, I guess.
It's almost like it's, what it's making me think of is your experiences as a child, your experiences of reading a lot of theater. And mm-hmm. it's almost that you wanted to give people that same experience.
That's exactly it. You must have read our website.
No.
That's exactly it. My co-founder and I are avid film and television and play. We just love theater, live theater, and reading theater. And we just felt that we wanted to share that with others. Yeah. Mm. Because it does something. Sometimes we, even in a film, we will leave the film and talk about all the different aspects of, you know, the characters. We'd leave a play and have a discussion. So anything, you know, that sparks the imagination is something that I've always been interested in.
Mm. I was going to ask you what you've most loved about Unseen Theatre, and I'm wondering if you've just answered the question or if there is something else there.
There's so many aspects that I love about being in a position to work with other people. There's so many wonderful playwrights that I've met over the years of working in playwrights groups, but also just being an actor and hearing someone say, oh, I've written a play. There's a lot of good work out there that isn't being produced. And to be in a position, as I said, we're small, so we're a small, you know, we're not producing every week or anything, but we're doing our best to get work out there, work that we think needs to be heard. And that's a wonderful feeling to be able to work with someone and say, we're going to get your work out there. And this perhaps will be a launching pad for them, for their career, to take something that is a play that maybe they've submitted to festivals and, you know, maybe doesn't get selected or gets selected, but is somewhere that not a lot of people get to see it. And this, by putting it on the internet, allows people to have access to their work as well. And all the actors we work with, the directors we work with, all get to have sort of a portfolio of work based, you know, not of course only on our podcast, but it's a real immediate sort of resume for them. Mm. You know, it's available. They can say, oh, I directed this, or, you know, I acted in this piece and you can listen to it. Here's a piece of it, you know, an episode and so forth. So yeah, being able to share that with people and help them perhaps even just a little to move ahead in their career is always a good feeling.
One of the themes that I'm hearing coming through very strongly is that not only have you been, as an actor, experiencing other people's experience, and by living in different places, you're experiencing how, you know, directly how other people live. Mm-hmm. There's also a very strong theme of then going one step further and actually supporting community and supporting other people, supporting playwrights, supporting actors. It seems like it's a very strong driver for you.
Well, I've always, I guess, had a mindset that we're all in this together and we are here to support each other. And, you know, I've been supported. I've had wonderful people who have stepped up and worked with me and helped me get to the next level in various different parts of my life. And I certainly want to give that back if I have an opportunity to.
There's two questions I usually ask is at the end of my interviews. The first one is, has being a woman, we've spoken about this a little bit, but has being a woman in your career been a positive or a negative? If there's anything you'd like to add to what we've said previously.
Sure. Definitely being a woman has informed my life and my work. Starting as a dancer, you can imagine there were a lot of things that men don't have to go through that women do. And I'll just leave it there. I'm sure your audience's imagination can go. You know, some of the costuming, some of the choices, some of the, you know, I love to dance and the body's very much involved with it, but then people make assumptions based on that. You know, I was actually told at one point when I was having a conversation with someone that, wow, I didn't know you read.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, I mean, and this was, you know, I was a young adult and kind of just laughed or something. But yeah, there's assumptions that are made as a woman. And also, the industry is still dominated by men, both in film, in television, and in theater. And there are, as you and I both discussed, there is a lot of work, I think, for women still to do. I attended a wonderful forum a couple of years ago and wrote an article about it for LinkedIn, but it was sponsored by Disney and the Actors Fund, and it was Women on Broadway. And it was a panel discussion of women talking about how to inspire other women. And for me, it was, you know, wonderful guests, wonderful panelists. Whoopi Goldberg was there, and Cheetah Rivera, and Leah Salonga, and, you know, many, many others. And it was just a wonderful experience to listen to these women speaking about their careers and their fears as women, even though they had made it, you know, quite far. They're all, most of them celebrities or Broadway stars. And yet they still had fears about their own worth and their own value and how to, you know, help other people. And I think it was Tina Fey who said, you know, we want to drop the rope down to the next woman to climb up. Mm. And I remember that visual. I guess I have a very visual memory. And I thought, that's exactly what I want to do.
Mm. I love that. I really love that. I was doing a workshop on Tuesday night about last week with some senior women in the bank, mm-hmm. in a particular French bank. And one of the comments they made is, you know, we're all senior women and yet we're all still have all these fears.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's part of our society. We've got some more work to do. We're making progress. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, in the last 5-10 years, a lot more women playwrights, a lot more women, you know, film directors, etc. But it's, you know, a long time coming.
Mm. Mm. Diane, I just wanted to recognize the work that you've done in creating Unseen Theatre. I think it's a wonderful platform and a wonderful way of promoting perhaps unknown and known playwrights. And I really wanted to just celebrate the work that goes into that and the intentions behind it too, the intentions of actually helping other people and creating something and bringing us back to listening as a way of sparking our imaginations in this world that is so visual. And as we come to an end, is there a last, anything that we've missed, anything else that you'd like to say? Is there a message that you'd like to give to people who are listening? As anything at all?
Sure. I think we've gone over a lot of territory and I'm sure we could talk more because there's always information that I'm sure I'm leaving out. But I think the important thing for anyone listening, and something I've learned, is just to follow your heart. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't say, because we didn't talk about this aspect of my work, but throughout my theater career, throughout my dance career, throughout my life, I've always had a job other than theater. I've never been able to completely support myself. There were times where I've had, you know, a good couple of years. But even during those times, because my work ethic is strong, I've had another job. I've had another life. And I've had to find a place to continue to follow my heart, to continue to allow my passion to be realized. And so that's what I would leave people with, is if you follow your heart, you can at least feel true to yourself.
Mm. Just, I'm just curious then as to know what your other job has been.
Oh, many, many. Too many. I've worked in corporate. I've worked in the restaurant business. I've worked in hospitality. I've been a chef. I've multiple jobs over the years. Yeah. Mm. Mm. Whatever it takes.
Mm. Fantastic. Well, thanks, Diane. Thank you for that message. And thank you for all that you're doing with Unseen Theatre. And thank you for your time this evening. I've really enjoyed speaking to you.
Well, thank you so much. It was a wonderful chat. And I'm honored to be included among the women that you've interviewed so far. So thank you so much, Cecilia.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Brave New Women. Certain podcast sites such as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Podchaser let you leave a rating and a review. The more ratings and reviews we get, the more people will listen, and the more these women's stories will be shared. So I'd really appreciate it if you could. Thanks for listening.